This either is, has been, or will be a Krypton Radio production as soon as we can get the TARDIS working properly to figure out which one it is!
The Mark of the Corsair, fantastic bloke. He had that snake as a tattoo in every regeneration. Didn't feel like himself unless he had the tattoo or herself a couple of times. Ooh, she was a bad girl!
And so are we!
Live and in your face. Well, in your ears, anyway. We
so
are.
Well, your ears are part of your face.
Yes, this is true. Live and in the sides of your face. We are the Corsair's Closet. I am the Madeline with a box, obviously. She is the Time Siren, delightfully.
Hello.
And he is the awful husband, stupendously.
Hello, hello, hello.
Very awfully. Very adult fan of Lego-y. We should clarify this. I do not go around saying I have an awful husband. He is an adult fan of Lego. Do not spread rumors.
Yes, we
but
have
you
to
like your awful husband.
I do.
Yes, and she's so enamored with him that we have to have that explanation every single time we bring up the adult fan of Lego thing, which I happen to think is freakishly adorable.
Well, here's why she likes the awful husband. Lots of husbands go out with your friends at night. And they go into bars and get in trouble and get drunk and all that.
Yeah.
If I have a free night, I pull out my Lego and I'm sitting in front of a TV so she knows I'm not causing any trouble. She's not going to have to bail me out of jail.
There you go.
Unless it's Lego jail. Unless you go overboard on the Legos. Unless she leaves you alone one night and she comes home and she finds just Legos everywhere and is like...
There have been days like that, you know. One of my favorite New Year's Eve stories is when it was after the Christmas, he got the... Star Wars Star Destroyer in Lego. And it's how many pieces?
3,000.
3,000 pieces.
Wow.
He did a time...
Every half hour I took a picture.
Every half hour.
The camera's on a stand, so the same
angle.
Yeah. And we did a... You know, we put it all together. We did a fast forward through it. And it was so funny because at night... He would cover it all with a blanket. Our cat Rhubarb would sit on the blanket. So one of these shots was of Rhubarb sitting on the blanket. So when you fast forward through this, you see this cat pop in and out of the video.
Oh, God, that is so funny.
But when he was doing that, I was watching Tank Girl. It was a perfect New Year's Eve,
let me tell you.
That day was epic.
That's fun. So, we have a busy show today. In fact, it is so busy that we actually asked the Corsair to do a temporal inversion so that we can pack more stuff into this episode. But the problem is, with temporal inversion, there's this whole paradox factor. And so, we're actually researching stuff to talk about while we are recording. So,
yeah, thanks for Corsair for not telling me that part of it.
Yeah, well, when does the Corsair ever tell us the entire story? You know,
yeah,
she has
no
a problem with that.
Yeah, she just thinks it spoils the fun.
Yeah, so... Forgive us if we're busy on the console while we're recording, but we just have so much to discuss, and apparently we also don't have enough to discuss at the same time.
Yeah, go figure on that
this
one.
This is why I avoid
That's
temporal compression.
That's the temporal problems, yeah.
Yeah, this is why I avoid temporal compression, but she thought it was a good idea, so anyway, thank you, Corsair. Not. So where shall we start? Well, we do have a Behind the Curve segment we have to address today.
Definitely do that.
We all collectively caught up on some stuff. We have some costuming things that we discovered that we have to talk about yesterday. I have a new project to talk about, my first in almost a year, so that'll be good. While we are dealing with this temporal compression issue, why don't we address that and then move forward?
Jump right into it, darling.
Okay, why don't we start with the costuming thing?
Okay.
We were out to head to the movie theater for the Behind the Curve thing, which we will address shortly. And Dennis and I started talking. I've mentioned it on the show before. I've recently been engaging in some what I like to call store-bought costuming. I'm a big fan of the show Teen Wolf. And there are some awesome communities online, specifically on Tumblr, where people get together to try and identify items of clothing worn on the show. And then you go out and you try and buy them. Some people collect them. Some people do actual cosplay. Some people just like the fashion and they want to dress like their favorite characters. I'm a little bit of all three. I'm actually planning a femme-style Stilinski cosplay for those who watch the show. So I'm trying to collect...
And what show is that?
It is Teen Wolf.
Teen Wolf. Thank you.
Yes. On MTV. They're on hiatus right now. I think until June or July. But, oh my God, so good. The writing is brilliant, and the actors, I want to fling Oscars at all of them. Especially Dylan O'Brien, who plays Styles Stilinski, my favorite character. He wears some awesome hoodies, so I'm like trying to collect his hoodies, but, you know, I'm also putting together costumes at the same time. Anyway, there was an incident that happened recently that I mentioned to you guys, and it spurred a conversation about cosplaying outside of the realm of crafting.
Lower budget costume.
Exactly, low budget.
You don't have to spend there are people that spend $3,000-$4,000 on the costume.
Yeah, and it can get
pricey. Yeah, and they ain't us.
Well, it can get pricey too if you're doing store bought costumes. Like for Teen Wolf, there are some characters on the show who wear very high end brands.
Yeah.
But others, like most of the boys, they buy a lot of their clothes at Target. I own several things from Target.
Oh, Target. Yes.
Target, the height of sophistication.
There you go.
So it's a. You know, it's a lot of fun to be able to do that. The first stuff I bought, actually, was a Champions hoodie at Target, a Mossimo pullover hoodie, and a t-shirt, a graphic print tee, and, you know, in, all in the men's department. And the t-shirt says, "Let's settle this like adults," and it has graphics of hand doing rock, paper, scissors. So, very amusing, you know, to me, and I love it. And I've just kind of gotten hooked on doing this. Well, anyway, what happened recently was, on one of the last episodes of the season, there was a character, Lydia Martin. She wore this dress, a beautiful little, kind of like a skater dress type thing, came to well above the knee, and it was in a tapestry floral print. Just adorable. I mean, if I had the body for it, I would wear a dress like this all the time. For the last 2 or 3 months, it seems like, nobody's been able to identify this dress. There's been a lot of people who've come up with lookalikes, matching fabrics. But the costumers for the show have a very strict policy of certain characters only wear certain brands and only shop at certain places. Like, they're trying to make it more realistic.
Yeah, like a real person. Yeah, like have
Lydia Martin's
brands.
Fashionista.
Yeah.
Sometimes she wears Guess stuff in Gap, or sometimes she'll shop at H&M and Target. Stiles Stilinski wears a lot of Target stuff. Scott McCall, the main character, you know, again, more Target, but a few high-end brands as well. Well, finally, recently, somebody contacted the costume department at Teen Wolf, and they were able to identify the dress. Like, it's such and such a brand, I think the Collective Couture or something like that. But this is the brand. We don't remember exactly when we bought it, so lots of luck trying to find it. And yesterday, what happened is somebody discovered, hey, if you call the Nordstrom Rack and you ask for this dress, here's the UPC code. They may or may not have it in stock. And if they don't have it, they can order it for you. So, what the company, you know, Nordstrom Rack, what the company is going to discover, that on this one day, all of a sudden, they sold out of this one dress. So their sales figures are going to be very screwed up.
Well, yes,
you get the
UPC very
code,
weird.
You got gold.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the exact number that you need.
Yeah, and so now people are looking for UPC codes of all these pieces that have been really hard to find, and they're going to call different stores and see if they can get them, like, to order them in special and that sort of thing. So it's making the whole process a lot easier, and a lot more interesting, because again, it's a mad scramble for everything. So that got us into a discussion about, you know, store-bought costuming, you know, in the car yesterday.
Right.
And you mentioned to me that there's a type of Japanese cosplay called Lolita, where something similar sort of goes on, like with the communities online that get together to try and find costume pieces.
Well, yeah, okay, briefly, if you're not familiar with Japanese Lolita, most people know goth Lolita. The idea of Lolita is it's Victorian.
Mm-hmm.
It's cute. It's definitely not sexy. You're covered from your neck to your toe.
Oh, okay.
So you're supposed to be cute and innocent and sweet. And there's goth Lolita, sweet Lolita, country Lolita. There's a lot of different Lolitas, different styles, but that's the basics of the Lolita style.
Okay.
And the serious people who do this often buy their clothing from Japanese companies. Like, there's the one called Oh Baby, the Stars Shine Bright. That's probably the most famous one.
Okay.
But Japanese sizes are different than American sizes.
Oh, big time.
Yes. So sometimes you think you're buying something, you know, somebody has a cross-reference. If you're size 8 in America, your size whatever in Japan, but they don't always match the same. So a lot of people do is they'll buy something, like a shoe or something that doesn't fit, and they'll put it on eBay. Or they'll put it in these communities where they trade Lolita clothing until they find something that fits them. So there's a lot of this back-and-forth trading, so people can make their Lolita costumes and get things that fit them.
And, you know, that actually sounds a lot like what's going on in the Teen Wolf shopping community, I guess it would be, or cosplay.
Yeah.
They've added, you know, tags to the blog that I follow, teenwolfoutfitshop.tumblr.com. Shout out to them. The two girls that run it are fantastic. They've added that, you know, people... There was another dress recently that was worn on the show. They put links up to where you could get it, and it sold out in, like, a day. And after that, what was happening is people were like, I ordered a medium, but it's too big for me. If anybody has a small, I'd be willing to trade you. And so people are swapping outfits, you know.
That's great. That's really cool.
It's really a community effort to try and find things. And actually what happened yesterday is the two girls that ran the blog, they thought that they got their, you know, the mystery dress everyone was looking for. Yeah. And they released the information, and so many people swamped the store that the servers crashed and they never got their confirmation, so these two girls missed out on the dress.
Oh.
And so I'm hoping the community kind of gets together to try and make sure that the two girls get their dresses, because they do so much work to run this blog. It's fantastic. Mm. But they've also said, just for future reference, if there's an outfit piece that we want to get our hands on first, we won't be releasing that information to you guys until we have confirmed our purchases.
Well, that's uh-huh.
Yeah, so well, that's what you get, sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
But that does what it is, what happens, and a lot of people will do the same thing. So there was a pair of shoes that was worn on the show recently. When they originally were released, they were a pair of Coach shoes that retailed for like $450.
Ooh. Wow.
And so, you know, people bought them up and stuff, and now you'll find them on eBay and what have you, and the shoes are a lot less expensive, $80 to $100 when they're resold.
Well, that's reasonable.
And what I've also discovered, along this same vein, is there are websites online where you can buy high-end clothes. People are, like, selling stuff from their closet that they don't want anymore, you know, a pair of Coach shoes or a designer handbag, that sort of thing. The clothes are good quality, you can get some great deals, and again, it's a good way to find hard-to-locate items. Specifically, you know, from a particular show, or if you're into this sort of thing, what I've discovered is by trying to buy up all this, like, Teen Wolf wardrobe stuff, I see other things that I really like, or other things that strike my fashion fancy, so I'm kind of getting into shopping again. And
well, it sounds like you buy just regular clothes.
Yeah,
well,
it's all just regular clothes. It's not necessarily anything specialized or costumey, but it's, you know, it might be something that was worn on the show, and you like it. But I've discovered some stuff, like, there's a character on the show, Allison Argent, she wears a lot of stuff under the label Free People, and their clothes are actually really cute, and I actually want to start trying to buy some of them, like, to wear for myself, because it's neat. And, excuse me, like I said, Stiles Selinsky wears a lot of awesome hoodies that I'm just trying to collect them all, and there's an actual brand, Threads for Thought. They deal in sustainable apparel. And I have one of their hoodies that was worn by Styles on the show, and it's, like, super comfy and super warm, and I really, really like it.
Hmm.
And, you know, the Target stuff's always great, and Lydia Martin wears a lot of stuff from H&M. I find their sizes don't like me very much, but the clothing is just, it's so freaking cute. So I look for a lot of lookalikes that might, you know, be able to fit my big fat butt. But anyway, it's a great hobby to have, to collect this stuff, and it sounds like it's a sort of trend in the cosplay community where it's not just, you know, people watching a random MTV show. There's commonalities with the Lolita cosplay that you were talking about. And it brings up another end of cosplaying that we've talked about a little bit in the past that you've actually done. When you're looking for all these bargains on pieces that you might need for a costume, and you're trying to do it for as little money as possible, there's another avenue you can go if you want to get, like, super creative with something. The Teen Wolf thing, you know, I'm trying to do my Stiles Selinsky cosplay matching as much stuff as I possibly can. You know, I want to wear the actual stuff that was worn on the show. But if I wanted to go for a look, like, for example, he wears a lot of colored jeans, and I can't really find those necessarily, and I don't know if I could really wear the men's jeans. I don't know if it would fit my body. But I could go out and find a pair of red jeans. A good place to do that might be to hit a thrift store.
Right.
And so you actually did that, was it last year or the year before?
Oh, it's a couple of years ago. We have a friend, Mr. Bill, we call him, and he used to do clown work for Orange County Children's Hospital. And there are actually clown groups, clown clubs, like there'd be a Star Trek club or whatever.
Oh!
And they take their clowning very seriously, like you would in a Star Trek club where you create a character. They create a clown character, a clown persona, and then they go out and do charity work, like I said, Orange County. But when you're starting out, like any costume, you don't always have a lot of money. And so what he did, he told me about, is Goodwill costuming, like Goodwill stores.
Yeah.
Because you ever go into, like, a Penny's or something, and you're going through the racks, you go, who would wear this, right?
Yeah.
This looks so ridiculous.
Yep.
Well, somebody eventually does, and it ends up in Goodwill.
Yeah.
So these ridiculously loud clothing or whatever can be your clown costume. And you can actually make a decent clown costume from Goodwill stores and thrift stores and Salvation Army.
That's really cool. And you actually did it with a lumberjack costume.
Well, at first I did with Mr. Gumby from Monty Python. And,
oh, okay. okay.
You know, Mr. Gumby?
Yeah.
I wanted to do a Mr. Gumby, and there are certain things that make a Gumby a Gumby.
Right.
So you have to have the sweater vest.
Yeah.
Then you have to have a long sleeve shirt and roll up the sleeves, and then you need suspenders, and a pair of pants, and it doesn't really have to be any particular color or scheme, because there are several Mr. Gumbies in the show at one point.
Yeah.
So, but those are the things that make it, and the handkerchief hat.
Yeah, and don't the Gumby pants have to be like at your knees or something?
Yeah,
or
you
like,
roll them up to your knees.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So I just bought a cheap pair of pants. The most expensive thing was the rain boots, because it's a specific type of rain boot. I think I got that at like an army thrift store, an army surplus store. And that was the most expensive item. I think they cost me like $40.
Okay.
But the rest of the costume was all under $100.
That's really cool.
And everybody recognizes me as Mr. Gumby. Go, ooh, my brain hurts.
Yeah, like that's how we first met. Yes. I was a Gumby, and I was the only one. You told me that I was the only one that day that made the right face.
Exactly.
Yes, even Peter Davison recognized you.
Yeah, Peter Davison liked my Gumby.
Yes. Yes. So you have an actual endorsement from a British person.
And the Eighth Doctor liked my Gumby, too.
Oh, yes, he did!
Paul McGann liked
Paul McGann. There was a dead dog party after the Gallifrey he was at. And he came up to me and said, I like your costume.
That's so freaking cool.
So when Brits like your Gumby, that was really made
yes,
my day.
Yes, endorsement from a British person.
Yes. And so then when I wanted to do the lumberjacks, same thing. You know, I wanted to get a plaid shirt. And it was just regular jeans, so I just wore a pair of jeans I had. And again, I had to get some like heavy-duty work boots. So that was just like $12 at some thrift store. I don't think it was Goodwill, some other local one. But you can put the costume together pretty cheaply, and people recognize what it is.
Yeah, and I actually think I might have to do that with my some of my Teen Wolf cosplay. Like I said, there's generic parts of the costume that aren't necessarily identifiable.
Right.
But you could go anyway. Like, Styles wears a lot of V-neck shirts. Some of the blouses and T-shirts that the girls wear, again, generic stuff. A lot of these skirts, you can do something a little more simple. There's a white skirt that Allison Argent wore in one episode with a French Connection top, and it's a pretty easy thing to duplicate.
Yeah.
So I may have to hit the Goodwill for some of that stuff, and possibly even for elements of my upcoming costume for next year's Gallifrey, Iron 11.
Ooh.
So I'm trying to decide how I want to do it. I was talking a little bit yesterday with our industrious producer and station owner, Gene and Susan, long may they reign, and I could either do a red and yellow or red and gold suit, which might be kind of impractical because it would be expensive and I could probably never wear it again, unless I did the costume again, but I'm also kind of thinking of maybe Marvel Cinematic Universe style Tony Stark meets the 11th Doctor.
Oh.
Possibly just doing the 11th Doctor with a really obnoxious arc reactor in the costume. So that might be a little simpler. Again, there's elements of the costume I could wear again. I might want to... I don't know if I'm pulling too far into the obscure, but maybe do the Doctor a la World War II in the Impossible Astronaut when they're reading about his exploits and you see him in the wife beater looking down in the tunnel.
Yeah!
Because that could be, you know, Tony escaping from the terrorists, and it could be sort of the 11th Doctor style. You know, again, I may be reaching a little
bit. Well, you know, anything period like the 50s, 60s?
Yeah.
You can find clothing in that and in thrift stores.
Yeah, well, I may be reaching a little bit in terms of the Doctor because I'm trying to merge Tony Stark and the 11th Doctor. So, it's a little difficult, but hope springs eternal. So I'm kind of, I might have to hit the thrift stores and see if I find anything that stands up. Maybe I can find like a red sequined blazer somewhere or work that into a costume or something like that. You know, I want to see if I find anything that inspires me. Right now, all I've got so far is the arc reactor itself. I have a toy that I need to spray paint the correct colors because it's like red and blue. And I think the red part may need to be silver or gold, depending on what kind of armor scheme I go with, or if I just have it implanted directly into my chest. Mm-hmm. So there's a little work to be done on that end. And so, yeah, the whole Goodwill cosplay thing really kind of hit me in the right place. It hit a sweet spot with me, so I thought we needed to talk about that on the show today.
Well, you know, I was thinking, when you go to these places, you go enough... There's some amazing... You can buy wedding dresses that people have used once and just donated. Okay, Donna getting married, being adopted by a doctor.
That is true. You know, believe it or not... You'll have to excuse me, listeners. I'm still trying to get over the Tolarian flu. when I was a kid, maybe 9 or 10 years old, I don't know if you remember the old Fallbrook Mall. You know, for those who are not local to L.A., there was a mall in Southern California that a lot of it was abandoned for a long time, and they finally turned it into just a shopping center.
Yeah.
But the old they had a store there called $10 and Under, and it was basically formal wear for $10 and under.
There you go.
I bought this dress. It was magenta. It had a sequined bodice and, like, a flared skirt. It came down to my knees in front, but it went down in a train in the back. It looked like something a Vegas showgirl would wear. I kept that dress for maybe 15 years, and as long as I was able to fit into it, I used that for so many Halloween costumes and talent show performances, and I probably could have cosplayed with it at some point if I was in a cosplay at that time. But it's just random stuff like that. Outlet malls, Goodwill, random thrift stores, even maybe antique stores where they might have stuff you might pay a little bit more for it if you're looking for a very specific vintage-y sort of look. But there's a wealth of cosplay possibilities out there that don't necessarily require a lot of handiwork. I mean, if you're not super crafty or you're...
I can't sew, so this is the only kind of cosplaying I can do is buy it off the rack.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, if you're not real handy, if you're on a budget, if you're on time constraints,
yeah.
It's a good way to be able to still cosplay and have a good time and not break the bank or tear your hair out. So, yeah, I mean, if that hits you in the right spot, like kind of hit me with all the Teen Wolf stuff I've been doing, we will see if we can put some links in the show notes. Again, you can find things specific to whatever fandom you're in. Me, it's the Teen Wolf thing. If there are other TV shows that you follow, there's places online. I find a lot of stuff on Tumblr, but there's also the live journal communities like the Doctor Who cosplay and what have you. And a lot of that stuff is bought. I know people do like mass purchases of the sweater vests for the Fifth Doctor and the Seventh Doctor. Different parts of, I think, the cricket costume that the Fifth Doctor wore and stuff like that. So... there's so much you can talk about with that.
Well, the whole thing is it's cheap, and you just go hit about 3 or 4 of these on a weekend.
Yeah.
And you'll just be amazed at what you can find. Yeah. You'll be inspired.
Yeah, we need to, like, do a thrift store crawl or something.
Well, if you do, like, 3-piece black suit, Men in Black, you got
it. There you go! You know? There you go! Absolutely. Or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
There you go, too.
Yes, exactly. And, oh my god, what's going on with that show right now? I still can't talk about it because there's so many spoilers. But you need to be watching the show if you aren't already. Yeah. My emotions are doing such great things. The only thing I can say for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. without spoiling anybody, except minor casting spoilers, you have been warned, Patton Oswalt has been amazing on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He's actually on the show and he's convincing.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was like, you know, he's playing a character that's very kind of like a nerdy agent type, possibly an analyst, you know, welcome to the secret base sort of thing, you know, I'll get you guys your lanyards and stuff. But then he has this little turn that he does. There's a couple of scenes where he's talking to, you know, he's talking to Phil Coulson about something and it's secret. And he tells him, you know, this is Eclipse Protocol. You can't tell anybody. And if you do, he doesn't say it outright, but it's like, I will end you. And I believed it. I mean, I really... Patton Oswalt's performance on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. recently has given me new respect for his acting chops.
Ooh.
So, check it out if you aren't already.
I have to catch up. We have to get Hulu and catch up.
Get Hulu, do the thing, don't be afraid.
Yeah.
So, let's see, what other things...
Well, speaking about catching up, how about the Behind the Curve?
Yes, that's right. I almost forgot about that, and I can't believe it. Yesterday, we all went to the Discount Theater to finally see the Academy Award-winning Frozen.
Yes, we're behind the curve, but it was worth it.
It was. Oh, my God. I've actually been pretty spoiler-free about the whole thing since it came out. Don't ask me how I managed that. I've known some things that were in the movie, but, like, when that one scene was released online, I didn't watch it. I hadn't heard the songs yet. So I went in pretty clean. You know, I knew some of the characters. I knew some of what was happening, but not everything. And it was so good.
There are a lot of really good songs. Everybody's heard Let It Go on the commercials.
Yes, Let It Go!
There are a real lot of numbers that are really good. And, you know, it's already reached $1 billion.
Yeah.
And I think Monsters, Inc., you know, it's been out for 4 or 5 years, just barely reached $1 billion dollars now.
Oh, my God!
Yeah, with international sales and CD sales. But Frozen, you know, within what, 6 months, it's already reached $1 billion mark.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah. But I was telling Time Scientist, I think this did for 3D animation what Lion King did with 2D animation.
I think you're right. We didn't see it in 3D, we saw it in 2D, but yeah. It was still...
Well, this whole CGI kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because with the cell art, you know, Disney was kind of waning. They had good movies, but wasn't breakouts.
Yeah.
And then they really revamped their animation department when they did Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
And that kind of started them on the swing back up again.
Right.
And then they did Beauty and the Beast. And that's where cell animation started blending in with computer graphics. Like right. The whole dance scene.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
The whole ballroom was CGI with 2D animation, cell animation characters in it.
Right.
So that was another breakthrough. And then what really broke it through was Lion King, because they took the music really seriously. And the story itself is very much like Hamlet.
Yeah.
There's that classic element to it. There's the whole orchestrated music to it. And so that was a breakout. It wasn't a kids' film anymore. It was a film.
Yeah.
That kids and adults could relate to.
Yeah, it was a legitimate motion picture.
Yeah. And that's one thing we have prejudiced in this country. If you go to Japan, animation's for everybody. It's not considered kid stuff. Like, yeah. We consider it. So this was the breakthrough film for animation. And I think Frozen is doing the same thing for the CGI animation style.
Yeah.
That Lion King did for the cell style.
You know, we've seen a lot of animated movies that have great attention to detail. You know, the hairs on the animals and the expression in the human faces. The detail in this film was just very striking. And there was a lot of moments where you really kind of forget you're watching an animated movie.
There are.
And
yeah.
That's what really struck me. It's like, I've never really experienced that before. And... you know, one of the biggest things for me was the music, because I'm a music nerd, and basically, if it's in my key, I love it, because then I can sing along with it all day long, so Let It Go is my new favorite song, and, you know, I'm randomly bursting it, Let It Go, Let It Go, okay, so I need to stop doing that, but, like, Elsa's transformation with going from her queen costume to her ice princess dress.
That was a beautiful, I mean...
Her Frozen dress was just so gorgeous, and that would be a cosplayer's dream. If you're into costuming and sewing and everything, I will never be that good.
If you can pull that off, oh my gosh.
I will never be that good, but I want to be, because I want to be Elsa when I grow up. I want the dress! Yeah. I want the dress! And it was just, everything was perfect. The song at the beginning really hit me, too. It's like, that's another one of my favorite songs from that. And the voice acting was really, really good. I'm not a huge fan of Kristen Bell's work in general. Just I've never really gotten into her stuff. She really surprised me in this movie. She was very, very good. And Idina Menzel, of course, you know, she's Idina Menzel. She can do no wrong. And there was a couple of unknowns that were playing Prince Hans and not Sven.
Kristoff.
Prince Hans and Kristoff. I've never actually heard of them. I don't know who they are, but I need to find out.
Yeah, they did a very good job.
They did. And Olaf was fantastic. I love Olaf. And I really like the fact that it didn't end in a traditional Disney fashion. I mean, there are Disney movies where you don't have the formulaic boy meets girl, boy saves girl, and they live happily ever after. But this was different in a lot of really tiny ways that made it better, in my opinion.
It wasn't a love story in the boy meets girl sense. It was a story of two sisters' love story each other.
Exactly, exactly.
And so they were the crux of the story. So there was romance in it, but that wasn't the centerpiece of it.
Right. It had romance in it, but it was not a romantic movie.
Right.
And
it was a subplot.
Yeah, you know, and I thought that was great. And like I said, a lot of little things that made it even better than it was. It didn't have a conventional Disney romance ending. The characters were not portrayed in traditional ways.
Well, you didn't have an evil villain, per se. You had somebody, trying not to spoil it, but they could not control her powers. And she's actually trying not to hurt people.
Exactly, yeah. There really was no... there was no obvious villain towards the
end. She was viewed as an evil character, but that's because she couldn't control her powers.
Yeah, and, you know, there was a villain, we won't say who, but the villain did not come out until towards the very end of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have a menacing presence throughout. We had a lot of very human characters, flawed. Another character that could have been a villain, but really was just kind of hilarious.
Yes.
And I believe Alan Tudyk voiced that character, and I won't say who it is, but I'm probably saying who it is without saying it anyway. But Alan Tudyk, his skill with voice acting will never cease to amaze me. I've been amazed by him ever since Wreck-It Ralph, and he played the Candy King.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and he basically was doing Ed Wynn the whole
time. Yes, he was, and he did a great job doing Ed Wynn.
Yes.
Although, and, of course, Ed Wynn did a lot of Disney films, like Alice in Wonderland, so it just kind of fits in there.
Yeah, although I will still say if they wanted an Ed Wynn-type character, they really should have gotten Ralph Garman to do the voice, because he does a podcast with Kevin Smith, Hollywood Babylon. He does impressions, and his Ed Wynn is so spot on. It's better than Alan Tudyk's, in my opinion. I love you, Alan, but Ralph Garman. But yeah, just the movie was completely amazing, and it's definitely got to go in my Disney library. And there's actually something else, too. I went in pretty unspoiled with the plot, but apparently there are more than a few call-outs to other Disney movies in Frozen.
Yes.
Like, if you're watching closely the scene where everybody's entering the castle gates for the first time in
the big party scene?
Yeah. If you look very closely, you will see Rapunzel and Eugene.
The camera is looking at the queen, and so Rapunzel and Eugene, you only see their backs.
Yeah.
But from her brown short hair, you can
tell.
Yeah,
and Eugene's back and his long hair. Yeah. And apparently, I didn't do it last night, but I want to do it, like, soon. I want to bust out Little Mermaid and check it. If you watch Little Mermaid and you watch Frozen, the sunken ship that Ariel explores in The Little Mermaid is the ship of Elsa and Anna's parents.
Oh!
Seriously. Yeah, we'll only be gone for 2 weeks and the ship sinks. And if you watch Little Mermaid, that's the ship! That's it!
Oh my gosh, that's clever. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like I saw it on Tumblr the other day, and I was like, wow! And then I saw the movie, like, now I have to go watch Little Mermaid and be sure.
Yes.
But, yeah, stuff like that. It's I love little Easter eggs like that, you know?
Well, something along that line, not the queen, her sister, what was her name again?
Anna.
Part of the plot is they're having this big party because the queen's going to be coronated, and Anna finds this prince and falls in love. He spends the evening talking to him. And at the end of the evening, they go up to her sister and says, "We're getting married." And her sister says, "I can't bless this marriage. You've only known them for a couple hours." But you think that's the plot of most Disney films.
Right? It really is.
I mean, with Little Mermaid, she falls in love with Prince Eric and has 3 days to get him to fall in love with her, which he does.
Yep.
Ursula, of course, destroys it. But that's, I mean, it's, well, first of all, it's a fantasy, it's unrealistic.
Yeah.
But it's also done for time compression. You have
exactly.
You have a 90-minute movie, your characters do kind of have to fall in love and get things going in 90 minutes. So, like, 3 days is about generally what's right.
Yeah.
You know? And if you look at it, let's see, Beauty and the Beast.
Right.
They spend, maybe a week.
Pretty much.
It's always a compression of time. So then she meets Kristoff because she's trying to get to her sister. And Kristoff says, "What? You met this guy in a couple of hours and you're already in love with him?" And everybody's making fun of this Disney tradition, which I thought was wonderful.
Yeah, again, one of those little things that made it better because they're poking fun at themselves.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely check out Frozen. It's completely amazing and it's worth your time and your money.
Hmm.
If for no other reason than the music, the cold never bothered me anyway. I really need to stop doing that.
This is, especially there's a song at the end.
Yeah.
Between the two sisters, and to me, it was screaming to be made into a musical.
Yeah.
Because they're singing and they're talking to each other very operatically.
Yeah.
You know, the queen's saying, "I went away because I don't want to hurt anybody," and his sister Anna is saying, "Well, you don't know what that the whole city's frozen."
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
But it's sung. It's a sung conversation, which is very operatic.
Yeah, so I think, you know, we have Lion King and other Disney musicals. I think we're definitely going
to
have
Frozen. This one has to be on stage at some point.
Yeah, it needs to happen. Because of reasons.
Yes.
So, yeah, Frozen's great. We've done our costuming discussion. What else do we have to talk about? You and Christine are heading for Gaslight Gathering,
yes,
correct?
Next week we will be at Gaslight Gathering, so we'll be talking about that. Either next podcast or the podcast after, because since we'll be down there, we'll be taping people and trying to get the interviews. And if Time Siren can edit all that together, then it'll be in the next podcast or the one after that. But
awesome. Since you're heading out there, why don't we take a look at the schedule of events?
Okay.
And see if we can't give listeners a preview of what they'll possibly be hearing about.
Okay, so they finally came out with a schedule. Let's see. So Friday, let's see, we have the vendor hall opens at 1 p.m. Registration opens at 11 a.m. So nothing really gets started until 1.
Okay.
Which is good for us because we have to drive down from L.A. and that's about a 3-hour drive.
Okay, anybody that's heading out, now you know that if you get a late start, don't worry, you're not missing anything.
They have a costume repair station.
That's good to know.
Art Saloon is open, which is the art show. That opens at 1. Tobias Eastman Photo Booth. Now, that's probably going to be good for my blog. I'm putting together a blog on writing, and since I'm writing steampunk right now, I'm looking for a good headshot to go for that.
Oh, okay.
So, the Tobias booth, it'll looks like it'll be good, because there's a lot of backgrounds, you know, from the period, Victorian era, so I want to do that.
Right.
They're having a high tea. So, but that one's already sold out, and that's with Professor Elemental, the singer, the steampunk singer.
Okay, I'm not familiar with him.
I'm not too familiar with it either, but he is doing a concert on Friday night.
Oh, okay.
So if we can get into that, and it's ticketed separately. So if you happen to be in San Diego, and you can't go to the con, or you don't want to spend the money at the con, you can buy the tickets at the door just for the concert for $15. Now, if you have a membership, then it's only
$10. Oh, okay.
So I do want to check that out, because I'm now getting into steampunk song, which here at Krypton Radio, there is an hour dedicated every week to steampunk.
Yeah, I've actually seen that program. I haven't actually listened to it yet, but I've seen mention of it around.
There's a great song, Lay's Got Bustle, which I really like. So
nice.
So this is a good time for me to catch up on different steampunk. There's also one called Something Giraffe. Is it Steam Giraffe?
Might be. I know what you're talking about. We've actually made mention of them on the show.
Look them up on YouTube.
Yeah.
Because they're like a clockwork band. They come out on stage completely still.
It might be Clockwork Giraffe.
Maybe it's Clockwork Giraffe.
It might
be. It's Something Giraffe.
If you want to check them out, I know that we've done some reporting on their work on Krypton Radio's website. Just go to KryptonRadio.com. Do a search. Hopefully the keyword giraffe will bring them up. But check under steampunk music and what have you. I know that we have done some write-ups on them.
Yes, and check them out on YouTube.
Yeah, within the last year.
Just put giraffe and look them up.
There you go.
2:30 to 3:30, getting back to the schedule on Friday, they have a pilot wing badge demonstration. This is a series they're doing on making different costume pieces.
Oh, okay.
And props. So you know how pilots have their wings?
Mm-hmm.
This is how we can make steampunky wings.
Oh!
So, you know, it looks like an airship, you know, pilot or something like that.
That's actually very interesting.
Yeah. They have a lot of classes on making, like, hats. And, you know, how the hats have the goggles and all the little different paraphernalia on it. How to put, you know, all this wings, whatever. So they have a lot of classes. So I'm looking.
It really seems like this convention is going to be very cosplay friendly.
Yeah. Look at this. Identifying textile workshop.
Oh, wow.
So if you're just serious in costuming, especially Victorian era, this tells you how, you know, what different materials they had at the time and how to color them, paint. There's a lot of, like, silk ribbon embroidery workshop.
Wow, okay.
Now, Time Siren makes parasols, and she does ribbon work on them. So that's the kind of thing she'd be doing. So there's a lot of things. Steampunk 101, this sounds perfect for me.
There you go.
Do you scratch your head when you hear the word steampunk? Join some of our local steampunks as they help you determine what is steampunk, what it is, and what can be.
That sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
That one of the best descriptions I've heard of it is like, I can't explain what steampunk is, but I know what it is when I see it.
That's actually very accurate. You know, prior to, you know, hanging out with you guys, spending a lot of time at Dilosophus and getting intimately familiar with some steampunk stuff, I did know somebody online who showed me, kind of introduced me to steampunk. She's like, yeah, basically it's like old-time stuff, but it, like the science fiction version of it. She showed me some awesome pictures of somebody who had steampunked their computer.
Yes, I've seen those.
Yes, steampunked a telephone. I think even a steampunked iPod at some point.
There's a casing you put around your iPod, and it looks all steampunky.
Yeah, and, but the steampunk computer really knocked me on my butt. You know, the keyboard had typewriter keys in it, and it worked!
Yes, it all ties into the computer just like a regular keyboard.
Yeah, and it just made me go, hominomina.
Well, what I love, have you seen people in wheelchairs in a steampunk wheelchair?
No, I haven't.
I've seen that twice now at San Diego Comic Con.
That is so cool.
And some of them, you know, have like the real smoke coming out. You know, because
they
have little oil burners with burns of smoke or whatever.
God.
I mean, it's the same principle as, you know, like Lionel trains with real smoke. So the temperature is really low to get smoking, but it smokes.
Yeah.
And there was one who had the bubbling tubes at the back.
Oh, wow.
And the bubbling tubes were actually like vodka and different. So you could actually pour yourself a drink from his chair.
Oh, that is so awesome.
So, yeah, but I mean, that's where you take a handicap, for lack of a better word,
yeah,
or a disability, and you work with it.
That's completely amazing. So yeah, that's terrific.
Yeah.
And, looks like there's going to be a recovering a parasol demonstration.
Yeah, like I said, Time Siren does parasols. Usually what she does, she'll take a blank one, the white one, and decorate it with ribbon. Recovering it is like the next step up is when you take the fabric off and recover it with a different fabric, which might be more Victorian,
yeah,
or it could have gears on it or whatever.
Wow.
But that's a little higher skill level.
I could totally see Time Siren checking that out, though. She needs to.
And here's something as Sherlock Holmes adventure continues.
So, Sherlock Holmes?
Yeah, Sherlock Holmes.
Squirrel! Let's take a look at this. Having written various pastiches that involve the great detective with the time traveler, Professor Challenger, and of course H.P. Lovecraft and the Cthulhu mythos, author Ralph Vaughn feels right at Mr. Holmes' Victorian London. Also, it's going to be like a one-on-one with a Sherlock Holmes writer.
That's
Ralph
right.
Vaughn.
Yes.
That sounds really interesting. I almost wish I was going now, dude.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is my first one. I really want to check this out. And meet the guests of honor, make your own steampunk short film.
That sounds cool.
Yes. There's a group called the League of Steam that's out here. If you look them up on YouTube, they do a steampunk. They're basically Western steampunk. So it's like all Old West kind of thing. And four of them do a steampunk Ghostbusters.
Nice.
If you check out their videos, it's really funny.
That's really cool. You know, speaking of...
And they have some books out, too.
Well, speaking of League of Steam and Western-themed steampunk, it does actually bear mentioning. It ties into Gaslight Gathering a little bit. We've spoken before about the good people over at Clockwork Couture.
Oh, yes.
Yes, they, with their awesome stuff on a regular basis.
They're becoming one of our favorite hangouts.
Seriously. Well, recently, the people over at Clockwork Couture went ahead and they did they were the stylists for a photo shoot that Will Wheaton did with, I believe what he's calling his Steampunk Desperados.
Ooh.
If you check out their Twitter, you can see the photo shoot. There were a few outtakes with the people at Clockwork Couture who did the costuming. And it looks fantastic. And you can really see that these people know their stuff. The photo shoot featured Will Wheaton, Doug Jones, Colin Ferguson, and Ashley Clements. And if you want to see some of the photos and maybe check out some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, you can check out Will Wheaton's Twitter, I'm sure, or Ann Wheaton's. Or you can check out our friends at Clockwork Couture on Twitter at @clockwork_CTR. So you can see what they've been up to recently. But the photo shoot was really, really gorgeous. So I want to make sure all of our steampunk fans know about that. And I will get Time Siren a link to Clockwork Couture's Twitter to put in our show notes so people can follow and check that out.
If you have any interest in steampunk, just reading it, costuming, whatever, you gotta check out Clockwork Couture. It's in Burbank, 707 Main Street. If you know where the Equestrian Center is, it's literally 4 blocks straight up. No problem finding it.
Yeah, and the people who run it are just the sweetest ever.
It's like a tiny little hole in Walford, so look for the sign, but you know, 707, can't forget that number.
Yes, and they have a TARDIS out front.
They have a TARDIS out front, and that's permanent. I thought it was just for their Doctor Who day a couple months ago. No,
fills my heart with Whovian glee. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and every month they have an event.
Yes.
Now, it just so happens the same weekend, next weekend, May
3rd, they're having an event. It's a Star Wars game day.
Oh, okay.
So they're going to have various Star Wars games, role-playing games, card games, whatever. So just come and play.
Nice.
Doesn't cost anything.
Yeah, so all of our residents of the Star Wars verse need to go and check that out if you're local to L.A.
Yeah, they don't just do steampunk events. They did this one. They did the Doctor Who ones. They have different events.
Yes, and they actually did an event in conjunction with Tabletop, the web show recently.
Yeah,
another thing Will Wheaton's involved in. Will, we love you.
He's awesome. He just keeps getting more awesome.
He does.
Yeah, he did Next Gen.
Yes.
Then he shows up on Big Bang. Now he's doing this game stuff.
Yes. Like a fine wine, he gets better with time and age. So, Will Wheaton, we salute you.
Well, you know, he's not just a star. He's also a fan, so he understands us.
Yeah,
he's into the same kind of things we are.
He's a writer. He's a nerd. He's an advocate for geek rights everywhere. He's awesome. And everybody needs to learn to abide by what I will now refer to as the sanitized version of Wheaton's Law, which is, don't be a jerk.
Yes.
Yes, and again, sanitized version. The real one involves a word that starts with D and rhymes with kick. So, yeah.
Good way to put it. I think
that's
that out.
The actual Wheaton's Law. The sanitized version is, don't be a jerk.
Yes.
And the addendum to Wheaton's Law is, no, seriously, don't be a jerk. And it's a great rule of thumb when you're online and stuff and just dealing with fans in general. It's a basic principle, and it is now known forevermore as Wheaton's Law, because he was the first person, I guess, who just, like, flat out said it to somebody, like, no, seriously, don't be a jerk! So, yes, Will Wheaton, we love you, and Gaslight Gathering sounds like it's going to be a total blast.
Yeah, let's just go quickly through some of these other things.
Yeah, we'll catch the
accessories to complete your steampunk ensemble.
There you go!
Now, see, I'm looking to make a costume of one of my characters that I'm writing.
Okay.
And I'm kind of caught because I kind of want to do one of the younger ones because I feel younger.
Yeah.
But because I'm 53, I'm kind of more toward the one of the older ones as a doctor, a physician. So I'm kind of caught, but I guess let's see what clothing would fit me best and what character. But, you know, either way, I can put together
Well, you can definitely do the younger version. I mean, in terms of cosplay, there's no such thing as too old or too young.
That's true.
I actually saw a great story on Tumblr maybe a year or two ago about a man maybe your age. He put together an amazing cosplay of Captain America from the first Captain America movie when he parachutes in to save Bucky and all the other prisoners before he actually becomes Captain America. And he's got the bomber jacket and the little toy shield and the helmet. Beautiful cosplay. It was fantastically done. But he was hesitant to actually go out and do the cosplay because he felt like he was too old for it.
Hmm.
Well, I guess his daughter or his son or something put his pictures on Tumblr and said, you know, I told my dad I'm going to put this on my website and show him how many people think he should go out and cosplay this because he looks awesome. The post got a lot of attention, possibly over a million likes and reblogs. And so later on, there was another post showing the dad going to Comic-Con as Captain America, and his costume was a huge hit.
You have a point.
Yeah, so
I concede your point.
Yeah, so if you want to do the younger costume, then go for it,
okay.
Man. Do it. Don't be afraid.
But, tying into the don't be a jerk thing,
yeah,
that ties back to what I wanted to say something when we were talking about cosplay. My feeling of what the difference between a costumer and a cosplayer is.
Yeah.
Now, the obvious version is that a costumer is more serious. And to a certain extent, that's true. And it's important because if you're a serious costumer, like you're doing a Victorian costume, you want accuracy.
Yeah.
And accuracy is important because it continues the knowledge of that era. You know, you don't want the knowledge just to be in libraries and in museums. You want the more people to know it, the more it will maintain in our own history.
Yeah, it turns something that could be considered a hobby or you know, like a fun thing into something that is more academic or scholarly.
Right.
Because you're actually taking a skill set or a piece of knowledge from a bygone era, and you're continuing to make it relevant in the present.
Exactly. Now, the dark side of that is when you get the costume Nazis. I don't know if you've ever heard that.
Yeah, the elitists.
Term. Yeah, the elitists. Where if you have anything slightly wrong, they scoff at you.
Yeah.
And when you do that, then it's not fun anymore.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a historical costumer, and you see something that's wrong,
you could say something, hey, you know, that's good, but, you know, they actually did it this way. And you can be helpful, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, you're passing along knowledge right. then instead of criticizing.
But if you're a jerk, you're criticizing.
Yeah.
And where it comes into being a jerk, there are some people, just because they can have more money to throw into the costume, scoff at people who don't have that much money. But yeah. they like the character.
Yeah.
So they dress up as Captain America or Thor, but the costume isn't as perfect because they don't have the money. Or they have a life and they don't want to spend that much time.
Yeah, they just want to go out in yeah. costume and pretend to be their favorite people for a while.
So I think that's what I see as a costume. A cosplayer is really in it for the fun.
Exactly.
And it's skewed younger with kids and everything. But some of those kids have really good costumes.
Yeah.
But the thing is, they're less likely to make fun of you, except for the jerks. There's always jerks somewhere.
Yeah.
But they're in it for the fun. And if you can recognize the costume, if you can recognize the costume for what it is and have fun with it, that's all they're in it for. And
yeah.
That's why I like cosplayers better than costumers. And that's why I like anime expos and anime conventions, because you see more cosplayers just having fun, and you don't see the costume Nazi so much.
And, you know, if you encourage those novice cosplayers who may not know what they're doing and may get things wrong, then they may want to invest
exactly.
more time in getting it right later. Again, you know, because everything for me goes back to Tumblr. I saw a great cartoon a while back of, you know, a little girl who was, I guess, trying to dress as an anime character. She had, like, a taped-on tail and a headband with kitty ears on it and, like, yeah. a colored leotard. And a bunch of, you know, more sophisticated cosplayers were laughing at her. Like, oh, God, look at that costume. It's ridiculous. You have no business here. And she was really dejected. And the next panel, a woman comes up who's wearing a more sophisticated version of the same costume, you know, more professional leotard, the tail's been sewn in, and she's got, like, kind of like a mane thing going on, and she's like, wow, your costume's really great, can I take your picture? And the little girl, like, just lit up, like, yes, yeah. take my picture. And that's how you encourage people to keep, like, if you do kind of a, you know, hackneyed costume, but you really love what you're doing, and you're really proud to be portraying this character, and people come along, yeah, can I take your picture? Your costume's great, you know, I love it. And maybe even give you helpful hints, you know, in fact, that costume's great, but in fact, if you used this color of material, it would look even better. You should try that next time.
Exactly, be
people
helpful.
Will go, and they will try that next time.
Yeah, don't, especially little kids. When you discourage a little kid,
yeah.
there's no excuse for that. That's the uber jerk.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the people who have no business being there in the first place, with, like, capital letters in front of everything.
Then you don't know what fandom is.
Yes.
If you don't understand fandom is there to have fun and to celebrate what you love, then you have no business being at a con.
Yes. Costume morality.
Yes.
The more you know. So that's been our public service announcement to the costuming community for today.
Yes.
So let's see what else we've got on
listen
the docket.
Oh, back to Steve Boston.
Let's see what else we've got on the docket.
Okay. Just scanning. Let's see. From junk to steampunk demonstrations, how to take things you would normally throw away, pass up at a yard sale, or just stick in the box and make them into steampunk props.
Yes, if it's got gears in it, I'm imagining you can use it for steampunk cosplay.
Yeah. Well, we know a guy named Tadao.
Tadao Tomomatsu.
Yes.
Yes.
He usually MCs at Lost Con and Gallifrey and a bunch of cons
yes.
like that.
We love Tadao.
And he's into steampunk. And he's made guns out of, like, squirt guns and water guns
oh
and
my
toy
God.
Rifles. And he paints them and sticks stuff on them. And they look awesome.
That's totally cool.
And everything I just mentioned, the stuff you can get at a toy store cheap or, you know.
Yeah.
PVS piping.
Sounds like the kind of thing I'm probably going to have to do for my arc screwdriver when I do Iron 11. I'm going to
yes.
have to do an arc reactor screwdriver instead of just a sonic screwdriver.
But some of the things are really cheap. It's just how you paint them and put them together.
Yeah.
So
let's see. So we're getting towards the end of the day here. What else have we got on the docket? Oh, a leather bracelet workshop. That sounds like fun.
Yeah. Basic steampunk archetypes.
Oh, there you go.
How to use the main archetypes to figure out how to dress. Are you an aviator, explorer, or a mad scientist? What are your archetypes? What would they wear?
Nice.
So, this has really got me. JPL NASA is doing presentations. Mars Curiosity Rover. This is real science.
Oh, wow. That's so cool.
And I don't see it here, but I did see a notice before. The Museum of Science and Air, or Air Science, in San Diego is doing two presentations. Real-life airships Over San Diego, a historical look.
Wow.
And airships in battle, like in World War One and Two.
That, yeah, like the Zeppelins and the Zeppelins London
and
Blitz.
Dirigible, yeah.
Oh, that sounds like so much fun.
And that's historic, but it still fits in the theme.
Yeah,
so.
Oh, that's totally
so, yeah,
cool.
Their science and industry museum is putting that on.
Let's see, and as we get towards the end of the evening, it looks like everything's going to be closing down, and then later on they're going to have... how to properly wear a corset. The return of the Magic Lantern and Paper Theater.
Yes.
Nice. And then the Friday night concert with that's the Professor one, Elemental.
That's the one you were talking about. That's the one I want to go see,
yeah. Okay, so it looks like, there's going to be an astronomer on hand. Martian Astronomy and Viewing. You can take a look at Mars through a telescope. That hits my astronomy geek in the right spot. I wish I could be there just to see Mars, man.
If you live in L.A., we have the Griffith Park Observatory.
Yeah.
And there's one night a month that a lot of these people who do this as a hobby will take their telescopes out.
Yeah.
And, you know, the main telescope will look at one thing, like Jupiter.
Yeah.
And they'll put out telescopes and look at something else, like Mars or whatever. Those telescopes on the lawn, they're privately owned, are now more powerful than the one that's in the observatory.
That blows my mind. That blows my mind.
They're about
mind.
Maybe 3 feet long, and they probably weigh about 100 pounds or so.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can buy them. They're buying $3,000. But, I mean, if you're serious, you can get a telescope more powerful than the Griffith Park Observatory.
Wow. The world we live in.
Well, the observatory one is a classic. It's bought in, like, the 1930s.
Yeah.
And at that time, it was one of the most powerful telescopes in the world.
Yeah, the Griffith Park Observatory, if you're local to L.A., it's worth a visit or seven. I've been up there, like, maybe half a dozen times in my life, and I always find something new every time I go. And just being up there at night and being able to look at the valley without light pollution.
Yes.
Words cannot capture it. I swear, the first time I was ever up there and I was on the roof at night to see the stars and the city with no light pollution, I swear to God, I got drunk on it. It was it was so breathtaking. So if you're local to L.A., Griffith Park Observatory, put that on your freaking bucket list.
And they have like three or four movies that they rotate, and they're all about 45 minutes long, but really
cool.
In the planetarium.
Yeah, Planetarium is awesome, too. I love it there. It's a geek's dream.
It is. And it has a great museum downstairs, and it's worth a visit.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And it's cheap. The movies are like $5 or something. It won't break your budget to go see it one day.
Yeah, definitely. Well, wow, we've actually gotten a lot covered in this time, so I think we're getting to where we can kind of wrap it up.
Okay.
But you know what? I just realized something. With the temporal compression that's been going on, where did Time Siren go?
Oh, no, she phased out into another time zone.
You know what I bet would happen? Temporal compression, we packed so much into so little time, we probably lost her somewhere in the temporal loop while she was researching material for us to look through.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Well, more material for next week.
There you go. Corsair! We're going to need your equipment. We got to pull Time Siren out again. We got to go into the engines. Hopefully we'll make it out.
Throw her a temporal lifeline.
Yeah, we'll catch you guys next week. I am the Madman with a Box.
I am the Awful Husband.
And the Time Siren is somewhere here in the temporal loop. So
she's somewhere in time.
There you go. There you go. The costuming and everything, perfect. Yeah, okay. Yeah, we need to go. The Corsair.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, bye guys.
Get that rope.
The Corsetteers would like to thank, apologize, praise, or lay waste the reputations of all those involved in Frozen Disney movies, all Goodwill stores in Southern California, steampunk conventions we are about to invade in San Diego, and Krypton Radio. This has been, was, or will be a Krypton Radio production. Please visit www.corsairs-closet.com for prior episodes, links to our social network, show notes and email addresses, and our new blog. Please come, please comment. We would love to hear from you.